Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. My guest today is Scott Evans. Scott's got about 10 years' experience going into prisons and working with those of us that were at one time getting ready for release, and now we're released. Scott's got some great ideas for us there as well. Scott Evans, right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on The Journey of Hope. Love to get that mail. It's MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Let me know how you're doing. MathersRodney at yahoo.com. And welcome back. My guest today is Scott Evans. Scott has been delivering programs to state and federal prisons for 10 years. His focus is on entrepreneurialism and how it relates to pre-release preparation. He has a book called Jump That Fence. And I don't think he literally means for you to, you know, if you're listening to this and you're incarcerated, to jump the fence. But Jump That Fence is the name of his book. Scott, welcome to The Journey of Hope.
Hey, good day. Thanks, Rodney. I appreciate it. Yeah, it was funny when I decided to build a program around this latest book, Jump That Fence.
Right.
It's all about, the book is about transitioning from familiar territories into unfamiliar and unknown territories and kind of tackling or facing obstacles. And a couple of the federal prisons, the chaplains, although I'm a secular volunteer, the chaplains escort me around. And
right.
They had to ask the warden and the assistant wardens if it was okay to bring in a program called Jump That Fence. So there you go.
Yeah, I can imagine. I know there's some, this is kind of an aside here, but, you know, there's guys that in Texas prisons that patrol that fence line. And I think they wake up every morning saying, Lord, let today be the day I get to use this weapon, because they go their whole careers without even getting to fire a shot. Thank God. But, yeah, they call them a perimeter patrol. And normally in Texas Department of Criminal Justice, what happens, what I found out was that those are guys that, let's see, what's a nice way of putting this? They screwed up their other assignment, so they stick them out there on perimeter patrol. Anyway, Scott.
So they drive in a circle all day.
They drive in a circle all day in a pickup truck, and hopefully they don't accidentally shoot themselves. I've heard stories about that, too. Scott, can you give us a little bit of your background? We like to start that way on The Journey of Hope. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Of course. Sure. Thank you. Back in 2002, this is going to seem like I'm kind of skipping across the street here, but just to update you. So back in 2002, I got into the inventing, and I launched a few products on infomercials, which right. was very cool. And they did very, very well. And some did not so very well. And then I was giving speeches. I was talking mm-hmm. to different entrepreneurial groups, different inventing groups,
right.
authors on how to develop products, how to develop an idea. I mean, a book, writing a book is an idea until it becomes an actual product, right? Mm-hmm. So then I met a guy he and I were speaking on the same stage, and we partnered up and we created and produced a movie, a motivational movie called Pass It On.
Okay.
And it was a motivational, inspirational movie that came out. I won't say it was a sequel. It was kind of the unofficial sequel of The Secret.
Okay.
And we were both very successful in our respective careers. So we decided, let's not talk about intention and thinking about succeeding at something. Let's talk about the action steps it takes to be wealthy, to be inspired, to be successful, to be happy. And we formed a company, and we produced this movie. And then during that time, a company came to us, and we made an agreement to produce, to publish a magazine called Personal Development Magazine.
Okay.
And the reason all that's important is because we wanted to make a big splash with this movie, Pass It On. So we had a world premiere in Las Vegas, and that's where the whole prison work started. So in 2007, we had a world premiere. 1,100 people showed up. And one of those people was a captain of the California Department of Corrections, or lieutenant, rather. And okay. He asked if we'd come, and we being me and anybody from the movie I could get there, and we're talking, you know, everybody from Mark Victor Hansen to Michael Beckwith to just the whole host of notable motivational people. Uh-huh. Anyway, so I lined up three or four people, and we all went to McFarland, California, which is might be familiar to some of your people because it's a movie with Kevin Costner, McFarland, USA. It's an actual place, and it was an actual true story, and it's an actual city, town, up in Central California, where, outside of growing a whole bunch of almonds, they have several state, privately managed state prisons.
Okay.
So they asked if I'd come up there, so I did, and it was so gratifying, I never stopped. And then I went to, I gave a couple of speeches for an Emily organization up in Canada. I'm not involved in any network marketing organizations, but I go and speak to some of them, and a chaplain for a federal prison came he was involved in this organization, so he was in the audience of a couple of thousand people, and he came up to me after the event, I was at dinner with my host at the time, and he asked me, the chaplain asked me, would you be willing to come to my federal prison, where I'm a chaplain, and talk to some of my guys, and I said, sure. It's Taft Federal Correctional Institution in Central California, southwest of Bakersfield, California. In any event, make a long story short, and this is the short version, believe it or not, I go in, and this is the same prison. So there's two prisons. There's the camp, where there's no fence, and this is where all the white-collar criminals go, where
right.
you get the picture. And that's where right. Jordan Belfort, the Wolf of Wall Street, went. It's where Cheech and Chong went. Anyway, so, you know, it's kind of an interesting play when you go to these prisons. You never know who you're going to meet. Now, but on the inside, the main, inside the accordion wire, the razor wire, there's 2,600 inmates.
Right.
So what I have to do is I went in and I talked to these guys, and I put together a program surrounding Pass It On. I put together a program surrounding now I've got four or almost five programs now I deliver, and all 6 and 8 week programs. So that was my exposure. And for some reason, I mean, I just couldn't stop going, and because this is something that they needed that they weren't getting,
right?
And I had an idea about it was going to be lucrative and so on and so forth, but no, for 10 years it's been costing me whatever it's been costing me, and I go up twice, Wednesdays and Thursdays I go up to Central California.
Sounds like this podcast.
Hey, well, listen, it's a labor of love, too. People need to hear it and be exposed to things they're normally exposed to that are very curious to them.
So you've got all these programs going. Let's focus in on Jump the Fence. What exactly is the focus of that book? What is that about?
So the focus of that book, Jump That Fence, is about, let me put it this way. It's about facing three different fences in life. Ones we can not see through, ones that seem too good to be true, and ones that we can kind of see through and hear all the clutter and noise, but we can't quite associate what's going on over there. So we decide to stay in the familiar, on the familiar side of the fence. The title of the book came from the origin story of the movie The Sandlot.
Okay.
That big cult classic, favorite family movie of The Sandlot. In real life, that's the story of my childhood. I'm, in real life, two of those characters. And my brother wrote, narrated, and directed The Sandlot, and I am both Scotty Smalls, and I am the real guy that went over the fence. The character in the movie was Benny the Jet Rodriguez. So I was 8 years old. That was 43 years ago. I was 8 years old. It'll be 44 years ago in March, because I turned 52 in March.
Uh-huh.
And what I was doing at the time was I was jumping a fence to get a baseball. I was going from a familiar safe side of the fence to an unfamiliar, I didn't know at the time, until I landed on the other side of the fence, to an unsafe, unfamiliar side of the fence. So when I start the book, I talk about your afterlife. Okay. Right? So what happens is your afterlife, whether you're a spiritual person, a religious person or not, your afterlife, for the sake of argument and this program I deliver, is defined by how far into the future you are remembered. And I realized when I saw that definition, I said, wow, I'm going to be remembered literally as Squint Polidorus in the movie The Sandlot says, forever. Because that movie The Sandlot will never go away.
That's right.
Now, everyone that sees it won't know that necessarily that it was a true story and that somebody actually jumped a fence.
Right.
And actually got a baseball so the game could go on. So I decided, wow, because my publisher asked me, can you do a motivational movie, a book surrounding, you know, jumping that fence? I go, okay. So I wrote this book, and it's about expressing courage to leave the familiar and go into the unfamiliar. It's about what it takes. It's about definitions and courage, right? So far, strongest human instinct is to look at the familiar, according to Virginia Satir, a big pioneer in the 1980s, with 70s and 80s with family therapy and psychotherapy.
Right.
She says the strongest human instinct is to look at the familiar. And we can call that the comfort zone. We can call that fallback position. But there was a pastor, a big Presbyterian church in Hollywood. His name was Irving Lindquist. Back in the 70s, he wrote a book, Notes for Living. Mm-hmm. And he defined courage in his book as the power to let go of the familiar. So when I saw those two opposing propositions, how do you reconcile your strongest human instinct and having to let go of that in order to move forward? So it's an expression of being able to leave what's familiar to you in order to move on in life and experience new things and overcome obstacles.
Well, you know, I don't think that anybody walks out of prison into a comfort zone. Going through that transition, especially if you've been locked up for a while, is, it's rough. Even if you have a lot of support and resources, which most of us don't, but even if you have those things, it's still a booger. So where, Scott, in your life, were you able to pull from what experience did you have where you were able to pull the kinds of information that you want to relay to ex-offenders as they're dealing with the unfamiliar?
Right. So here's the funny thing. I'm a major contact point for a lot of these guys when they get out.
Okay.
And I think one of the major reasons, when they get out, that they reoffend, one of the major reasons is because they don't have any positive point of contact. And that's just the truth, right? Because if in a state situation, they're released, these guys are released typically, if they're not deported, they're released to the same county that they were arrested in.
Right.
They may not have family there. They just are released there because, and then they got to do maybe some halfway house time, and then there's some, probation. There's all these conditions put on their release.
Right.
And they've got no money. They've got no nothing.
Right.
Now, there are outreach programs, but they don't know who these are. Now, they don't know who they are or where they are. Now, they're given the information, but some of them are, the literacy level is pretty low as far as the state prisons go. So they don't always have a grasp on what's going on. Mm-hmm. And they're released to the same and have to associate with the same crowd that they were dealing with when they got arrested. And it's just a shame. So from my perspective, the people that have the better chance are the people in federal prisons, because they're either the white collar criminals that are in in the federal camps. And it's funny because depending on their profession, whether legal, doctor, CPAs, whatever they were,
right,
sometimes they can't go back into those professions. So when they get out, they don't know what to do. They've lost their family, probably because their reputation for the family in the city they were in went to hell. So it's like, what do they do? So when I started listening to them, and found and wanted to know what their concerns were, and I just started. They were my customer, if you will, though it's a volunteer status. I am. They were my customer, so I wanted to find out what I needed to address, and so I just asked them. And like for instance, recently on the 12th of January, a guy got out of the Taft Federal Prison. And, he got divorced. His wife divorced him. Everything was crazy. He was a money trader. And he said, I'm transitioning to the outside, Scott, and I don't know what to do. I have to live. I go to a halfway house for 6 months and then live with my mom in Southern California, a place I don't know. So I just started asking people, and then I just developed programs and conversations. And sometimes there are therapy sessions for 2 hours with classes. Mm-hmm. But I just ask the questions, what are your considerations and what are your concerns about getting out? And that's kind of how I addressed that issue of that issue of transition to the outside, because that's a big part of the conversation and a big part of the class is, what are you guys going to do when you get out?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about specifically how you address this transition with the people that you work with. And by the way, before we go any further, kudos to you, Scott, because, people listening to this show and their loved ones know that ex-offenders, particularly with certain kinds of offenses, they just get kicked to the curb. And they need somebody. They're still human beings, and they need somebody like you. So I appreciate what you do. But I would like to know specifically, what do you say and what kinds of things do you relate in the book to ex-offenders as they begin to face the unknown? What specific things do you say to them?
So, okay, specifically, I have to always go back to, we all have a story. And one of the things I do is I try to empower them and get them to own up to not what they've done, because I don't want to sit them and cement them in what they did to get into prison. I want them to understand a couple of things. The first day of incarceration is supposed to be your first day preparing for release. Mm-hmm. Then I want to know what they're doing to prepare for release. Mm-hmm. And I want them to know that I'm there to help them. So I want them to know specifically that they, whether they're, men and women of God or not, their afterlife is how long they live into the future in other people's minds. Now, do they want to live into the future as a criminal in other people's minds? Do they want to live into the future as a good guy in their ex-wives and kids' and parents' lives? How do they want to be remembered? As a result of their actions and as experienced by them and by the people that remember them. Because when you consider that they have to, these guys have to, and I say these things, I said, listen, you guys are going to be remembered right now by being incarcerated, by the crimes you committed.
Right.
So it's like, and I tell them stories in the book about my past, which is not a criminal path. It's just the things I've done. And I they have a bunch of handouts and they have the book in their hand and there's, they have to understand that the quality of their decisions determine the quality of their life. Right. So
right.
I go into decision-making. Now there's a thing in these guys don't particularly have to deal with this that I deal with, but there's a sentencing protocol called indeterminate sentence. And that sounds like a life sentence. So that's usually given to a juvenile offender.
Okay.
So juvenile offenders in the detention centers, they're told they have to exhibit two things in order to get out when they're 21. All right? They have to exhibit right and proper decision making, Mm-hmm. And they have to show a lack of impulsivity. And that's usually what got them, busted in the first place.
Exactly.
So I go through right and proper decision making through a psychological tool I have called the Survival Quadrant, making right and proper decisions and being happy with the outcome. And if you're not happy with the outcome, then how do we adjust your expectations? Mm-hmm. So we go through. It's an actual course. I mean, there's a lesson plan to every class, and it seems to work pretty well. And one of the things it does is that there's no open-ended questions, but when I say they, I mean the classes are 30 and 40, 45 people in each class, mm-hmm. and they seem to understand the simplicity of the message, but they've never heard the simplicity of the message. It's like making right and proper decisions. And we talk about, and we never talk about what they did, their offenses. We just talk about acknowledging that we've all done wrong things, but we're happy with the outcome.
Right.
We all fooled ourselves. So these are some of the specific things. And, it's a pretty dynamic course. It's a pretty dynamic message. But what's fun for me is when these guys start talking, because no staff or guards are ever in my classroom. One of the few outside of the ministerial volunteers that get to be in a room without any guards or staff.
That is unusual. Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. Scott, this is great stuff. I wish we had some more time. By the way, you've got a really cool web page. You are an inventor, kind of a licensing guy by trade, and lots of cool stuff on your webpage. How do we get to your webpage, and where do we find the book?
My website is theworkinginventor.com. Theworkinginventor.com. And thanks for saying that. It's kind of cool. I update it pretty regularly with articles on the blog section.
And then you have a blog? Yeah.
Yeah, and you can learn all about me. And it's funny how when I tell people about, or I'm talking about this book or my book, Invent That Now, or just different projects I have going, it all comes back to having an idea and developing that idea. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I'd say to you, Rodney, and all the listeners, and what I say since the last point I make, the last two points I make, on this course and any talk I give are, and I think you'll get that when you look at the website is, they have to answer a question, and it's, do you care about the impact of your decisions? Again, back to decision-making and impulsivity. Right. Do you care the impacts it's having on people? Because it isn't just all about you. And then when you're faced with a fence to jump, you have to check your resolve, and resolve simply means, literally means, do you have the firmness of purpose? So when you're faced with this fence in life, and this is it, these guys are we're all transitioning. I'll speak at a medical school or a university, and they're transitioning from student to doctor, student to professional.
Right.
I mean, think about this, right? So it's all about transitioning from where you are, and when we hang up, but we're going to transition into the next part of our day. And that's in the micro. So it's, how firm is your purpose? And do you care that the next step you take is going to affect somebody? How is it going to affect them, and so on? So you're going to see some of that on the website. Mostly you're going to see me bragging about myself. But the blog section of the website is very cool, I think. And I discuss everything from what we're talking about right now to how to invent, how to license things. That's enough about me, but there you go.
Okay, cool. Scott Evans. The book's called Jump That Fence. Scott, thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope today.
I appreciate it. Really do. Hope everything goes well for you all.
Thank you. You too, Scott. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. My name is Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Runway train, never going back. Runway on a one-way track. Seems like I should be getting somewhere. So far, I'm neither here nor there. Now, remember, you can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. Got a show idea? Just want to say hello? Just want to let me know how things are going in your reintegration? Love to hear from you. mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney@yahoo.com. Special guest Scott Evans, and I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.